Luther before the legate. Chapter 4. Sentiments of Luther and Staupitz. No doubt Melanchthon's arrival at a moment so critical brought a pleasing change to the current of Luther's thoughts. No doubt, in the sweet outpourings of a dawning friendship, and in the midst of the biblical labors to which he devoted himself with fresh zeal, he sometimes forgot Rome, Prierio, Leo, and the ecclesiastical court before which he was to appear. Yet these were but fugitive moments, and his thoughts always returned to that formidable tribunal before which his implacable enemies had summoned him. With what terror would not such thoughts have filled a soul whose object had been anything else than the truth? But Luther did not tremble. Confident in the faithfulness and power of God, he remained firm, and was ready to expose himself alone to the anger of enemies more terrible than those who had kindled John Huss's pile. A few days after Melanchthon's arrival, and before the resolution of the Pope transferring Luther's citation from Rome to Augsburg could be known, the latter wrote to Spalatin, "I do not require that our sovereign should do the least thing in defense of my theses. I am willing to be given up and thrown into the hands of my adversaries. Let him permit all the storm to burst upon me. What I have undertaken to defend, I hope to be able to maintain, with the help of Christ. As for violence, we must needs yield to that, but without abandoning the truth." Luther's courage was infectious. The mildest and most timid men, as they beheld the danger that threatened this witness to the truth, found language full of energy and indignation. The prudent, the pacific Staupitz wrote to Spalatin on the September 7th, "Do not cease to exhort the prince, your master and mine, not to allow himself to be frightened by the roaring of the lions. Let him defend the truth, without anxiety either about Luther, Staupitz, or the order. Let there be one place at least where men may speak freely and without fear. I know that the plague of Babylon, I was nearly saying of Rome, is let loose against whoever attacks the abuses of those who sell Jesus Christ. I have myself seen a preacher thrown from the pulpit for teaching the truth. I saw him, although it was a festival, bound and dragged to prison. Others have witnessed still more cruel sights. For this reason, dearest Spalatin, prevail upon His Highness to continue in his present sentiments." At last the order to appear before the Cardinal Legate at Augsburg arrived. It was now with one of the princes of the Roman Church that Luther had to deal. All his friends entreated him not to set out. They feared that even during the journey snares might be laid for his life. Some busied themselves in finding an asylum for him. Staupitz himself, the timid Staupitz, was moved at the thought of the dangers to which Brother Martin would be exposed, that brother whom he had dragged from the seclusion of the cloister, and whom he had launched on that agitated sea in which his life was now endangered. Alas! Would it not have been better for the poor brother to have remained forever unknown? It was too late. At least he would do everything in his power to save him. Accordingly, he wrote from his convent at Salzburg on the September 15th, soliciting Luther to flee and seek an asylum with him. "It appears to me," said he, "that the whole world is enraged and combined against the truth. The crucified Jesus was hated in like manner. I do not see that you have anything else to expect but persecution. Ere long no one will be able, without the Pope's permission, to search the Scriptures, and therein look for Jesus Christ, which Jesus Christ, however, commands. You have but few friends. I would to God that fear of your adversaries did not prevent those few from declaring themselves in your favor. The wisest course is for you to abandon Wittenberg for a season and come to me. Then we shall live and die together." "This is also the prince's opinion," adds Staupitz. From different quarters Luther received the most alarming intelligence. Count Albert of Mansfeld bid him beware of undertaking the journey, for several powerful lords had sworn to seize his person and strangle or drown him. But nothing could frighten him. He had no intention of profiting by the vicar general's offer. He will not go and conceal himself in the obscurity of a convent at Salzburg. He will remain faithfully on that stormy scene where the hand of God has placed him. It is by persevering in despite of his adversaries, by proclaiming the truth aloud in the midst of the world, that the reign of truth advances. Why then should he flee? He is not one of those who draw back to perish, but of those who keep the faith to the saving of their souls. This expression of the master whom he desires to serve, and whom he loves more than life, re-echoes incessantly in his heart, "Whosoever shall confess me before men, him will I also confess before my Father who is in heaven." At all times do we find in Luther and in the Reformation this intrepid courage, this exalted morality, this infinite charity, which the first advent of Christianity had already made known to the world. I am like Jeremiah, says Luther at the time of which we are speaking, a man of strife and contention, but the more the threats increase, the more my joy is multiplied. My wife and my children are well provided for. My fields, my houses, and my goods are in order. They have already destroyed my honor and my reputation. One single thing remains. It is my wretched body. Let them take it. They will thus shorten my life by a few hours. But as for my soul, they cannot take that. He who desires to proclaim the word of Christ to the world must expect death at every moment, for our husband is a bloody husband to us. The elector was then at Augsburg. Shortly before quitting the diet in that city, he had paid the legate a visit. The cardinal, highly flattered with this condescension from so illustrious a prince, promised Frederick that if the monk appeared before him, he would listen to him in a paternal manner and dismiss him kindly. Spalatin, by the prince's order, wrote to his friend that the pope had appointed a commission to hear him in Germany, that the elector would not permit him to be dragged to Rome, and that he must prepare for his journey to Augsburg. Luther resolved to obey. The notice he had received from the Count of Mansfeld induced him to ask a safe conduct from Frederick. The latter replied that it was unnecessary, and sent him only letters of recommendation to some of the most distinguished counselors of Augsburg. He also provided him with money for the journey, and the poor defenseless reformer set out on foot to place himself in the hands of his enemies. What must have been his feelings as he quitted Wittenberg and took the road to Augsburg, where the Pope's legate awaited him? The object of this journey was not like that to Heidelberg, a friendly meeting. He was about to appear before the Roman delegate without a safe conduct, perhaps he was going to death. But his faith was not one of mere outward show. With him it was a reality. Hence it gave him peace, and he could advance without fear, in the name of the Lord of hosts, to bear his testimony to the gospel. He arrived at Weimar on the September 28th, and lodged in the Cordeliers Monastery. One of the monks could not take his eyes off him. It was Myconius. He then saw Luther for the first time. He wished to approach him, to say that he was indebted to him for peace of mind, and that his whole desire was to labor with him. But Myconius was too strictly watched by his superiors. He was not allowed to speak to Luther. The Elector of Saxony was then holding his court at Weimar, and it is on this account probably that the Cordeliers gave the doctor a welcome. The day following his arrival was the festival of Saint Michael. Luther said Mass, and was invited to preach in the palace chapel. This was a mark of favor his prince loved to confer on him. He preached extempore, in presence of the court, selecting his text Matthew, chapter 18, verses 1-11, from the Gospel of the day. He spoke forcibly against hypocrites, and those who boast of their own righteousness. But he said not a word about angels, although such was the custom of St. Michael's day. The courage of the Wittenberg doctor, who was going quietly and on foot to answer a summons which had terminated in death to so many of his predecessors, astonished all who saw him. Interest, admiration, and sympathy prevailed by turns in their hearts. John Kestner, purveyor to the Cordeliers, struck with apprehension at the thought of the dangers which awaited his guests, said to him, "Brother, in Augsburg you will meet with Italians, who are learned men and subtle antagonists, and who will give you enough to do. I fear you will not be able to defend your cause against them. They will cast you into the fire, and their flames will consume you." Luther solemnly replied, "Dear friend, pray to our Lord God who is in heaven and put up a Pater Noster for me and for his dear son Jesus, whose cause is mine, that he may be favorable to him. If he maintains his cause, mine is maintained, but if he will not maintain it, of a truth it is not I who can maintain it, and it is he who will bear the dishonor." Luther continued his journey on foot, and arrived at Nuremberg. As he was about to present himself before a prince of the church, he wished to appear in a becoming dress. His own was old, and all the worse for the journey. He therefore borrowed a frock from his faithful friend Wenceslas Link, preacher at Nuremberg. Luther doubtless did not confine his visits to Link. He saw in like manner his other Nuremberg friends, Schirl the town clerk, the illustrious painter Albert Dürer, to whose memory that city has recently erected a statue, and others besides. He derived strength from the conversation of these excellent ones of the earth, while many monks and laymen felt alarm at his journey, and endeavored to shake his resolution, beseeching him to retrace his steps. The letters he wrote from this city show the spirit which then animated him. "I have met," said he, with pusillanimous men who wish to persuade me not to go to Augsburg, but I am resolved to proceed. The Lord's will be done. Even at Augsburg, even in the midst of his enemies, Christ reigns. Let Christ live, let Luther die, and every sinner, according as it is written, may the God of my salvation be exalted. Farewell. Persevere, stand fast, for it is necessary to be rejected either by God or by man. But God is true, and man is a liar. Lincoln and Augustine monk named Leonard could not make up their minds to permit Luther to go alone to face the dangers that threatened him. They knew his disposition and were aware that, abounding as he did in determination and courage, he would probably be wanting in prudence. They therefore accompanied him. When they were about 5 leagues from Augsburg, Luther, whom the fatigues of the journey and the various agitations of his mind had probably exhausted, was seized with violent pains in the stomach. He thought he should die. His 2 friends in great alarm hired a wagon in which they placed the doctor. On the evening of the October 7th they reached Augsburg, and alighted at the Augustine convent. Luther was very tired, but he soon recovered. No doubt his faith and the vivacity of his mind speedily recruited his weakened body.